we'll proceed to case number three, please. The United States versus Dent. All right, proceed, please.
May it please the court, Mr. Ketchin. This case presents an issue of statutory interpretation. In particular, whether or not Section 18 U.S.C. 1791, D1B, requires specific intent in possession of a weapon in a penal institution. At the jury trial during the instruction phase, I vigorously argued that the jury should have been instructed that intent was an element of the offense. This court in 1988 in Fox found that specific intent was not necessary for a prosecution under 1791. Subsequent to the decision, the statute was amended. Other circuits, in particular the Ninth Circuit, have interpreted Fox, and some of the footnotes to Fox as requiring specific intent in prosecution under 1791 A1. The government, in this case, charged Mr. Dent with possession of a weapon. The weapon in this particular case was a 3¾-inch piece of plastic. It was fashioned by melting pieces of plastic together in Marion Federal Penitentiary. The argument which I made at the trial was that the object, as I refer to it, was not a complete weapon and could never be considered a weapon without first considering the person's intent that possessed it.
Well, wasn't he carrying it on his body?
He was had it concealed in his rectal
cavity. Sure, right.
We didn't. He was definitely possessing the object, and he obviously knew it was there. The whole.
That's what I asked you.
Yes, that was never an issue at the trial.
Right,
we
can
see that.
Wouldn't concealing it that way be pretty strong evidence of an intent to use it as a weapon?
Yes, I think it would be. But the jury should have been instructed. The problem with this case, and the reason I feel strongly about this particular issue, is that the jury was not only instructed that intent was not an issue, but they were instructed that intent was not an issue. And the government instruction number 11 it specifically stated that the government is not required to prove that the defendant intended to use the object as a weapon. The amended section 18 U.S.C. 1791 D1B.
What if the object had been a pocket knife?
I think the same argument that I make now would apply. I don't.
Is that right? He carries it. What does he carry it for?
Well, I concede that your uses for a pocket knife at Marion Federal Penitentiary are much more limited than they would be on the streets of Chicago, where you might use it as a tool. But there would be other uses for a piece of plastic or a pocket knife anywhere.
Is there any proof, and just to get off that a second, is there any proof in this record that he was in any imminent danger at any time? That he was going to use this as a defense?
There was never any proof offered at the trial that that he intended to use this at all as a weapon. The government took the position that it was not necessary.
Well, didn't he say he was carrying it around because he of fear that he was going to be attacked by someone?
He submitted a before in the pretrial stages there was a joint declaration submitted which was actually made by a defendant in another case that you've recently heard. And in that joint declaration The other inmates indicated that due to the hostile nature of the race problems at Marion Federal Penitentiary, that they felt that their safety was, they felt imminent fear. That goes to the entire second set of issues, which I'm not, that you've already heard arguments on a few, you know, a few months back in the other case in Tokash 01-2103. And perhaps the government wouldn't have had much trouble had he chose to testify and had they properly instructed the jury. They might have been able to present proof that intent was present, that he, they could show specific intent. The government has taken the position that there should be a distinction between a weapon or an object which is designed or intended to be used as a weapon. And getting back to your question about the pocket knife, I think that as in the Gomez case, which is a Seventh Circuit case from 1989, where the weapon there was a zip gun. When you have a gun, an object which is inherently a weapon, such as a blackjack, nunchucks,
you'd have a hard time knuckle. Carrying a blackjack down here on yourself.
You would, yeah. The government's own witnesses, though, in this particular case, testified that they didn't believe this was a complete weapon. That this weapon, being only a 3 3/4 inch piece of plastic, would more than likely have been used with a handle, none of the, which.
But they did they testify that it couldn't be used as a weapon?
No. And then we're getting back into the same issue of the pre-amendment of 1791, which was an object which may be used as a weapon. And now 1791 reads, an object that is designed or intended to be used as a weapon. And I think when you read Fox, and it's been my argument all along, that section 1791 D1B is now a specific intent crime. And you really can't make a distinction between a weapon or an object that is designed or intended to be used a weapon. To say that within the same sentence.
Let me ask you something else, along the two different lines. What about a corkscrew that has a knife, has a blade with it, but its primary, no question, it's intended to use to pull a cork out of a bottle. How does that fit into your analysis?
A corkscrew?
Yeah, with a blade attached to cut the seal on the top of the bottle.
Well, I think almost anything can be used as a weapon. I think you can use a chair. I was a prosecutor. I prosecuted a man one time for beating somebody with a chair as a weapon, okay? Anything can be used as a weapon. A corkscrew, my ink pen, my comb in my back pocket. If I was an inmate at Marion Federal Penitentiary and I wanted to hurt someone, it's about anything I lay my hands on I could use as a weapon. Now, the problem with the statute and the problem with the government's position is every time an inmate sits down to eat dinner at Marion Federal Penitentiary, he could be prosecuted and given an extra 5 years. Because if possession of any knife becomes a weapon automatically.
You mean when it's given to him to eat at that time, that he has possession and he could be prosecuted?
I think that you could, under the way they interpret the statute at the present time, because it doesn't say with intent to use. It says, you know, they're saying, well, it is a weapon because it could be used as a weapon. Now, their position begs the argument, because a weapon, and there was no definition given to the jury of what a weapon is, and an object, or this knife, only becomes a weapon if you intend to use it as such. If you intend to cut your pork chop with it, then obviously it's not a weapon, it's a tool.
You're into your rebuttal time, but you can use it up if you'd like to sell it to you.
Thanks.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, my name is Jim Cutchin and I represent the United States. Addressing several points that Mr. Gross brought up. Obviously, you have to start with the plain language of the statute itself, and the language of 1791A2 really couldn't be any more clear. It does prohibit the possession of prohibited objects in federal prisons, and it goes on to specify what those prohibited objects are. Section D1A of that section sets forth, defines a prohibited object as a firearm or destructive device. Subsection B goes on to a, D1B goes on to a further list of prohibited objects, starting out with a weapon, and in parentheses, other than a firearm or destructive device, or an object designed or intended to be used as a weapon. Now, I believe that it is obvious.
Pretty clear that a firearm could be called a weapon under the statute, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Or a sword, maybe. But once you're, or somebody's gun, the other kind of gun, but once you get past that point, anything that could be used as a weapon or could be used for something else, that doesn't the statute mean then you're talking about an object prohibited if it's intended or designed as a weapon?
Your Honor, those are two separate manners of violating the statute. You can possess a weapon. If you possess a weapon, it violates the statute by itself. You can possess any other kind of object.
But then the question is, what is a weapon?
Your Honor, I would submit that if common sense has any place in the law, a knife in a federal prison would be considered a weapon. If you go onto the street and you would ask 10 people, other than a firearm, because it's clear from the language of the statute itself that Congress intended the word weapon to mean something other than a firearm, because it provides for it separately in another definition provision. The list has to include a knife. If you go to ask 10 people on the street, other than a firearm, what would you consider a weapon? I think knife would be at the top of the list. And I think this court, interestingly, in a bank robbery case, has answered that question. In the case of United States versus Smith, the court was addressing an argument that of a defendant that the fact that he only had a hunting knife did not put the person's life in jeopardy. This court stated that the exact language were, well, if the defendant had been using a unloaded firearm, he might have an argument. But the court called that argument weak, and in fact it wouldn't even apply in this case because the defendant possessed a knife, and a knife is always capable of doing immediate harm to someone. So this court itself, in another context, has answered the question about whether a knife should be considered a weapon.
How do you address the question of having a knife at a meal?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the inmates at USP Marion are not given knives of any kind at any time. So
that's a hypothetical, I understand that.
I understand, Your Honor. I believe that if that issue were to come up, the court could certainly address that. I think it borders a little bit on the ludicrous to think that Congress would have intended that the possession of a knife by any inmate in a federal prison, that we would get down to splitting hairs about why that inmate possessed that knife to have criminal liability. The mere fact that an inmate possesses a knife for any reason cannot be tolerated in a federal prison. I just don't think the hypothetical bears much reality to reality, bears much relation to the realities of federal prisons in general. It's interesting to note that the cases cited by the defendant in his brief all stand for the proposition that there is a difference in the statute in the way that the defendant is charged. In United States versus Rodriguez, the Ninth Circuit case that Mr. Gross made reference to, the court was addressing the fact that the judge has instructed the jury that you can convict if you find that it was a weapon or was designed or intended to be used as a weapon. He gave the jury both options, and the court said that where the jury is given both options and there's no special verdict form, that obviously you can't tell if all the jurors agree that it was a weapon. The court specifically said, had the jury been instructed with it was only a weapon and found as a matter of fact that it was a weapon, that there would be no problem, and intent was in fact not an issue. In this case,
the penalty is less for one than the other.
No, Your Honor, that is not correct. If an object, that gets into the defendant's other argument about a lesser included offense, which is the possession of an object that threatens the order, discipline, or security of the institution. That may well be a paperclip. That could be any kind of an object. Weapons or objects designed or intended to be used as a weapon are punished the same. Your Honor, I would also note that United States versus Allen, the 11th Circuit, also specifically said that where a defendant is charged with possessing a weapon, the specific intent is not an issue under 1791A2. In United States versus Gomez, the case cited by the defendant from this circuit, the defendant was charged with possessing an object that was designed or intended to be used as a weapon. Again, that's not what this defendant was charged with. He was charged with possessing a weapon, and the testimony is uncontradicted that this object could be used, and that all the correctional officers who were asked the question testified.
But you say that the testimony is uncontradicted as to what, that this could be used, what?
That this object was a weapon, and in fact there was testimony that by the fashioning of the notches on the end of the handle, or the end of the object, that a handle could be used, and we're talking about handles like rags tied around to keep the knife from slipping out of your hand. We're not talking about it being fashioned into some kind of fancy handle. The testimony was that the object, as it stood, correctional officers had seen other inmates and guards killed with that exact object. This was not just a piece of blank plastic. This was a double-edged knife, piece of plastic, hardened plastic, sharpened into a double-edged knife that the defendant concealed in his rectal cavity. I don't think you're going to conceal your eating utensils in your rectal cavity. At least I would hope not. On the other issue, I see my time is about up. Your Honor, I would point out that this case stands in different footing to the case. I know that Judge Coffey is familiar with. This defendant submitted no evidence or materials until the day of trial in response to the government's motion in limine regarding the necessity defense. It is the government's position that this defendant has waived any argument or objection to the government's motion in limine by failing to do that, and that as a result of that waiver, that the district court's decision in that regard is effectively unreviewable. Certainly, the submission of an offer of proof minutes before jury selection to an issue that had been pending for some 19 months before the district court shouldn't be sufficient for this court to review with any more deference, or to review at all the decision of the district court, but certainly no more than plain error, even if the court were inclined to review that decision. The defendant obviously made no showing that he was under any imminent attack, as the court's question indicated earlier, and there is no indication, even if you considered his offer of proof, that he was under an imminent attack. For those reasons, Judge, I think the first issue can be disposed of quite easily. The second is, again, just an issue of statutory interpretation, and the plain language of the statute should control. On the issue of the lesser included offense, the court, I'm sure, is very familiar. It is an elements-only test where all you do is look at the side-by-side elements of the two crimes. The defendant thinks that a possession of an object which threatens the order or discipline of the institution is a lesser-included offense. Clearly, the elements of the two are different in that requires proof that the defendant, that the object did in fact threaten order and discipline, whereas the possession of a weapon requires proof that it was a weapon. Those are two distinct elements. Although it may factually be difficult to violate the statute in one way without violating it in the other, this court has made clear in the Boyles case cited in our brief that it is an element-only test, and clearly the elements of the two are different. Unless the court has any other questions, the government will simply rest on its brief.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right. 1 minute and a half.
Perhaps if you stopped and asked 10 people on the street whether or not, under these facts, this was a weapon, they might agree with the government. All I want is a fair jury instruction to ask 12 people on the jury whether or not this was an object which Mr. Dinn intended to be used as a weapon, or whether or not it was an object which threatened the security or discipline of the institution, which is a lesser-included offense, and which only carries a 6-month penalty as opposed to the 5-year penalty for the weapons charge. Again, I think the government is begging the question. They're bootstrapping their argument by saying we charged it as a weapon, therefore specific intent is not an issue. And
what they didn't charge, I gather, was the second part of that, intended to be used as a weapon. They only charged possession of a weapon.
The indictment reads weapon. And it's in the same sentence of D1F, and in order to accept the government's argument, this court must find that Congress intended that any other that when they defined prohibited object, that a weapon, other than a firearm or destructive device, is a knowing state of mind, and in the same sentence, or an object that is designed or intended to be used as a weapon requires specific intent.
All right. Thank you, counsel. We will take your case under advisement.